they would bring in deer to the office to draw them to then go, this is what it should look like in the movie.
This is Bambi. Yeah.
Wow. Bambi was
not just a guess.
What's that?
Bambi's not just a guess. They based Bambi on some some stuff.
It would be great. See, those are the Disney secrets that I want to come out someday when they just go, boy, we really did not know what a beast looked like. And then somebody like makes some bad joke. They're like, yeah, until you go to Brian's house and you open his fridge. So, dude, I sent you that pic in confidence. Who sends pictures of fridges? Yeah, but no, you do. You definitely have Pixar energy, which I think is a, which is a compliment, not sketch energy like you alluded to. But Up
that's a nice little thing. You have a big face.
No. Oh, man, dude.
You have Pixar energy. Your face is too big.
Your face is cartoony. No, you're, by the way, enough with the face jokes. You got a great face. You, at some point, we're going to reach a day where people are going to be like, dude, not buying it. Enough self-deprecation over.
It's nice. Over, it's just so round.
See, it's not
like
even
a Pixar.
Yeah. Would you want to voice a, okay, well, when you do that, all I can hear is tiny cartoon mice singing and harmonizing about laundry. I haven't seen the movie. What would you want to voice, just on the topic of cartoons? What character? Ooh. Everyone's thought about that. And the further we get into this business, those things are going to become actual opportunities. And you're going to have to be ready when, you know, Dan Disney or whoever's running the fucking company goes, no, Taylor, I've seen your act. I like your joke about relationships. Look at me just not being.
Thanks
able
for watching my special, Adam.
Oh, I did watch it, by the way. But I also,
I know, I was just teasing you.
If I can be honest, by the way, I was trying to rack my brain for a bit. I saw in your new hour that you did in Aspen, because to me, you know, and whatever, I think you should just get better. Your Netflix special is fucking great, but that new hour was like when I was like, oh, she's awesome. And there's, so I was trying to do a bit in that racket, but then I also was like, well, that's not out yet, so don't reference it, even though I won't be doing the bit. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to like give away a secret before it's even out.
That's so nice.
But I was going to reference the bit, the one that came into mind about being on top in a relationship and the things the guys say to the girls. Very funny.
Right. That's the one Disney will glom on to.
That's the one that Dan Disney will go, yeah, I really like that joke about being on top. Like, I think this meeting's over. I think I'll voice an HR employee in the next film. No, what would you want to, what creature or animal would you want to be?
I feel like I'd want to be a chipmunk because it's probably the cutest animated character.
Totally.
With that still has a little bit of edge.
a chipmunk with edge? You know,
because like you're a bunny anything? Or something. Yeah, maybe like a chipmunk with a joint or something.
or just a chip on a shoulder.
Very progressive Disney Pixar movie. Yeah, because when I was a kid, I got teased for my cheeks all the time, and people would like call me chipmunk cheeks. So it would feel like sort of taking back the night.
I like that. That's actually that's way more thoughtful than I thought you were going to come back with. see, I was teased for the cheeks too, but I was teased from like, I got top to bottom. People were like, look, you on a whole look like a jelly bean who swallowed a Jell-O machine. And so I got the full, they didn't just settle on above the neck. They went from head to toe. Was Chester Chipmunk, or who was it? Chubby, what'd they call you? Chubby Chipmunk? What was it?
You said I had chipmunk cheeks.
Chipmunk cheeks. Okay. Was there, did it bother you? Because I'm always curious with the, this isn't how you became a comedian, was it? Like getting, because for me, getting enough of that, then I was like, all right, time to throw back and then start being funny, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, now you're not the fat kid, you're the funny kid. But did you just kind of brush it off, or were you affected by any sort of teasing? I'm curious.
I think I probably started being more self-deprecating up top to head any of that off.
Yeah.
And I still do it as an adult, and so when people get annoyed with me, as you just did where you said enough with the face jokes, I go, no, I've earned this. This gotcha. is These are years. This is how I've survived.
Yeah.
And also, like, I was on Whitney Cummings' podcast, and she was saying very nice things about me. And I said, yeah, but, like, this is recent. Like, I wasn't like, that attractive growing up. You know what I mean? So inside, you don't feel – I'm sure you feel this way, too, where you're like, inside, I feel like who I was when I was 12.
Oh, 1,000%.
Forever.
Yeah. And sometimes just to, you know, get that emotion truly – you know, back on a whole, I'll dip a couple Pop-Tarts into Cool Whip and just kind of do this thing where you just kind of scrape it like you're a Zamboni around the edges.
Yeah.
And
we call that meal coming home. That's a homecoming meal right there. Do you ever just eat really badly just because you get nostalgic?
Yeah.
And that's what you were doing when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the amount of my freshman year in college, I was in the fraternity, and it was actually sophomore year, living in the house, and I was the kitchen steward, so I had the key to the kitchen. So all the potheads, this is when I truly started getting high and just realizing the power that potheads give you if you have the key to the snacks, and
right.
And they would wake me up at 2 a.m. and I was like, guys, I have class at 9, I have to do this. You know, full scene from my acting class. It's my final. And they're like, they just hold up joints outside the window. And I was like, all right, one, you know, taquito or whatever I was going to, you know, open their eyes and hearts to. And I would go down there. And we also had the job of going to Costco to buying all the snacks. So I remember we had Costco muffins and ice cream and pop. We had just everything. We had like this budget for that your parents are giving to the fraternity that is going to like drinking parties, caravanning, you know, sorority girls in the buses to the events that you are orchestrating, and then the snacks and possibly the STD creams. And so I put 2 Pop-Tarts and a scoop of ice cream in between a Costco muffin, which by itself is a heart attack waiting to happen. So you got muffin. You got, I love, by the way, you are the commercial for this. If I ever get stony or broke enough to pitch this, you are, please let me save this Zoom footage of you going, like you just saw your son come home from war and he had the muffin with the Pop-Tart. That was genuine.
I'm so proud of and worried for you.
Yeah, great. Both legit emotions. So I have the Pop-Tart and ice cream in between the muffin and I have it like this and I'm about to take a bite of it like it's a regular sandwich. And my buddy just goes, you were a fat kid, weren't you? And I just started laughing and spit the whole thing out. He's like, only a fat kid would think to put Pop-Tart muffin ice cream muffin. And I was like, yeah, dude, I don't know if I'm going to make it out of college.
Well, also you had you had class in the morning and you were in a hurry.
Yeah.
So you can't eat Thank all you. Those things individually.
It's breakfast on the go.
Oh my God. Those Costco muffins are dangerous. No joke.
Right.
Thank you. Oh my God. They're so good.
So big. So unnecessarily big. You're like, one gets you through a week, but they're like, or a day. And you're like, good point, Costco.
Wait. Oh my God, that's so true. And so, growing up, I'm sure there were days that that's all I ate was just like halves of those giant muffins.
I know.
At different intervals of the day. I'm like, what is it, noon? I guess it's time for another half a muffin. Let's switch things up with poppy seed.
That's how you even had any idea that it was nighttime, is it, if you were out of muffins? Yeah. Like, there's only a quarter left. It must be 7 o'clock. did you have, were you like super as quick and personable as you are now as a kid? Because I always feel like that who we are now, and you're, you know, I think 10 years younger than me, but I still feel like, at a certain age, we do develop like the, not necessarily comedic chops, but just enough wherewithal to know, I think you start to really blossom into who you're gonna be at around like, I don't know, 12 to 15. I think you get a lot of the chips or a lot of the cards that are gonna be in your deck for who you are as a person, I guess, if I were to explain it. You know what I'm saying? Like you start to accumulate like who you are based on the people that are around you and your environment and your folks and all that. So were you, how much of this did your friends get at like, you know, 12? Elementary school, I guess.
I mean, I was funny with my friends, but I wasn't like a class clown or anything. And I really was very shy.
Yeah.
Until like college. I mean, I started doing stand up in high school, obviously, but it wasn't until I got to college and I started working and I had to talk to people all the time as just like a cashier at a restaurant I used to be like afraid to make phone calls to order food or whatever. Like I was very, very shy. Yeah. And I had horrible stage fright, like the first few years that I did stand up. It took a long time for me to not be afraid. I mean, once I was on stage, I was comfortable for a few years. Really? You think?
I mean, yeah. I did so much theater that being on stage wasn't as terrifying. It still though took, yeah, time to get comfy to where I wasn't nervously pacing or moving without a purpose. But so it is funny though that people like you're so grounded now. So, and I think it's easy for people to look at that and go, there's no way that you ever had a problem, but like, it's still public speaking. It's still just because you're good at it now, it doesn't mean you just decide you want to do stand up and then that part just goes away. Like the nervousness of being in front of people, that's, you know, that and the writing are just like constantly kind of climbing to meet each other in the middle to where it all can, you know, mesh up for one special that Disney's going to be on board with. But was there something that somebody said to you that made you minimize your anxiety to be on stage? Or was it just like, I'm just gonna have to do this a billion times and eventually just, you know, there are those old things about like picture people in their underwear or like with a swastika on their face, or I had a weird PE teacher, but something to make you go, all right, this isn't as bad as it could be, you know?
I think I talked to a comic when I was like 19 who just said like, you're really good and you don't work hard enough and you need to be getting on stage like every night as much as possible, and if you don't make it, it's your own fault. So that was big for me because it made me go, okay, I guess I have to just get over this. I have to get over how scared I was, because I was only going up like maybe a couple times a week, and once I started getting on stage every single night, it was like, oh, I'm not as scared anymore because there's another show tomorrow or in half an hour, or, you know, once you're doing it that much, the stakes get much lower because there's less pressure on each individual set.
Yep.
So I think that's what did it for me.
Yeah. You have to have somebody at some point to kind of go out of the way to give you that. Otherwise you're kind of going to just stay in your own, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. Like naivete. How do you say that word? Mm-hmm. Naivete, right? Yeah. Of just what you're supposed to be doing. And I think more now so, just because I think we all have, more accessibility to communicate with one another, that comics that have, more experience are a little more willing to, and I'm just speaking for myself and what I've gotten and what I've done, because you get a young comic that'll just hit you up on Twitter and be like, any advice? And, you know, you try to give them the, without having it be a stereotypical answer, I'm sure yours is the same, where it's just like, control what you can control, write, get up, find I always try to find something that is not just that, like get a community of people that, you know, hanging out is not like incredibly essential, but at least having people that you can not even bounce ideas off of, but just kind of, share the grind with, so that you don't feel so alone, because you can't really call your folks or siblings if you're having a bad night after a set and have them make you feel better, because they don't relate. So it's like having somebody else in that world, I think, is imperative.
Yeah, that's great advice. I usually just say write and perform as much as possible, because I'm not as thoughtful as a mentor, but that was very good advice that you just gave. I should do that.
Again, this is part of like just being older. If there's certain, like, I already have enough things in my life at 37 where I'm like, oh, am I 37 or am I trapped in the body of a 37-year-old, but I'm actually 22. But so you have to try to at least say things that sound more your age sometimes. But it truly is like an experience thing. Like there have to have been times already in your, your very, successful career where you go, wow, I can't believe I, did that piece of material, or I took that gig, or I've done this to all build to this moment. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's even just doing sets in LA. I mean, when you do a show in LA, sometimes that's all it takes to give way to like a huge opportunity
right.
that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And that's why we end up doing so many bad shows, because you just never know when it's going to be the one.
Yeah,
always when you don't expect it, that's the one where there's some executive there who's there to see someone else or is involved in the fundraiser and goes, oh, you'd be perfect for this part. And then you get a TV role. Or it's like those stories are maybe sound cheesy and dumb and like this idealistic version of Hollywood, but it kind of is like that out here. Like, you just kind of have to be around and keep showing up and doing the work. And if you keep doing that, things happen.
Yeah. How quickly did you get your, wasn't it with ABC, right? You had a pilot deal with them, right? Like pretty early out.
Yeah,
of the
gate. We wrote a pilot for ABC that didn't go, which was, I guess, two years ago now. And that was coming out of JFL.
Right.
For New Faces. Yeah. So,
you
know, good
experience. Yeah. What did that do for you as far as like now? Do you look back and go, man, when I get that now, like I've just seen and done so much more, had way more people in my corner probably coach you through, you know, the X's and O's of what you can do differently. At the end of the day, I think it's still, you know, what you're going to do and say and bring to the table that's going to make something happen or not. But do you feel like you have a more openness to like the people around you to kind of guide you on what to do now versus then?
I think I have pretty much the same people around me that I did then. Obviously I've been with my agency longer at this point, but I was with my management team at that point as well. And I feel like they've always given me pretty good advice and not led me astray and been pretty upfront with me and don't bullshit me. I think I just learned what I didn't want to make doing it, because I think we made the best version of the show they wanted.
Right.
As opposed to the best version of the show we wanted.
Yeah.
Because I went into those meetings not going, this is the show I want to make. I went in going, this is how I grew up. This is my life. This is my family. I hope you think I'm funny. And they're like, cool, we want to make the show. And you're like, what show? So I think now I have a lot more clarity on what I want to do and projects I want to be involved with and what makes more sense for me personally. And I'm so glad that show didn't get made, because if it had, I would not have been headlining as much as I have the last couple years.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been in a place where I could have done a Netflix special. I just wouldn't have been ready, or it wouldn't have been as good. And because that show didn't go, I did so much road work over the last few years, and I honed this hour and was able to somehow pull off Netflix letting me speak for an hour. So, you know, it's a stupid, maybe privileged way of thinking, but sometimes it really feels like, oh, that thing happened for a reason. Or
yep.
That thing didn't happen for a reason.
I know on your podcast, Self Helpless with Delaney and Kelsey, which is fantastic, you guys dive into a lot of stuff like that. Have you gained from doing a podcast like that more self-awareness of, you know, just aspects of being a person and trying to, I guess, you know, seek out self-help type things? Or were you always someone that was like, you know, like even you on Whitney's pod, which was a great chat to listen to, I think you both are so like, you know, self-aware and just wanting to be like the best version of yourself, which I think is a great trait. Whitney, I think, is, you know, obviously got experience on you, but just seems that she is, you know, really just got every, like, she says things sometimes and quotes it from a book or an article where I'm just like, oh, you're really doing the work as far as knowing how every little thing that we do and why we do it and how we tick. And I get not turned off, but like scared from some of that sometimes, because I'm like, I don't want to be in the know of everything of why it happens. Like, I, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like having all the answers or being at the, having it at my disposal. Like, sometimes I just kind of want to like live and learn, you know, and not really
that's interesting.
Have the breakdown of like going into this, keep this in mind. You know what I'm saying? Almost like going into a morning interview for a press for radio and having them not set you up for bits, but just getting to kind of wing it and have a conversation and trust that you're going to get through it.
Yeah. I mean, here's what I'll say about that. I think people who are into like self-help stuff or self-improvement tend to gravitate towards it when they're going through that specific thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody, at least I've, that would be like if you read a book about breakups while you were in a honeymoon period of your relationship.
Right.
I don't
while
think
you were dipping Pop-Tarts and Cool Whip.
Right. I don't think that I'm that level of like, I think the podcast has made me read things or watch things or research things or talk to people that maybe I wouldn't have normally.
Yeah.
Because Kelsey or Delaney is interested in them, or we have a fan write in and say they think it would be interesting, or we think it would be interesting to listeners, or we just want to learn more about it. But there are things that don't apply to all of our lives. I mean, we did a long distance relationship episode before any of us were in one and learned a lot, and we're kind of just applying what we could as like traveling comedians who were away from our partners for a lot of the time.
Okay. So you guys were just discussing like if you were in one kind of.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And you know, Kelsey and I travel all the time. So you're kind of in a part-time long distance relationship.
Yeah. As a you guys should have hit me up, by the way. I've been in three.
Really?
Yeah. You got, I mean,
where
if you do a,
live?
If you do a part two, one was in Indonesia. One was in my basement and
what?
One was, I'm sorry. These are, bad jokes.
Oh, one was, I'm sorry. I was.
You didn't hear the second one, did you?
Real?
No, but the basement. No. Not funny. Not true. We will keep that in, but just hope that the public knows it was a joke.
I talked over it. I'm sorry, everyone listening.
No,
I
it's fine.
Over the basement line. It was very funny.
Hey,
I thought you
Indonesia
were
crushed.
Indonesia.
Yeah. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scents. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop. And then pick your candles and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%. Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. And pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better. Start looking better. Start feeling better. Okay? Because everybody farts and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode. That's on me for opening with a comedy location that, okay. So New York was one. It was LA to, well, okay. First one was college. So we came from, both from Seattle. I went to USC. She went to Santa Barbara. So we were like, oh, we're 2 hours away. Why would we not try this? Because we were yeah, devastated. We knew each other forever, but we started dating end of high school, which was like December. And now come around, it's June, we're graduating. We're both on the semester system for college. So we're both going down in August. And it was just like, we're 2 hours away. Why not take a stab? Like, that's crazy. She was going to have a car. There's a train from LA to SB, and I was able to borrow friends' cars and whatnot. So did that for almost 2.5-3 years of college. And then it was just like, she's like, yo, next year I'm either staying down here or going back to Seattle. And I'm like, I am not, like, I wasn't this like, I am not getting married. That is a wrap. But I was very, you know, sincere about it, but about needing at least a year of college to, and not even like be single and promiscuous, but which is great, but being able to do like my plays and do some fraternity stuff, which got minimized because of the acting school. I wasn't able to participate in as much stuff and just be around, because I was leaving every other weekend to go up and see her. And I was like, I feel like I'm missing. Even a buddy who lives in LA was like, you want to go to the Dodger game? My dad knows the owner. And I'm like, I can't. I'm going to Santa Barbara to do the same shit, you know? And it was like, I started to really go, I am missing out and this sucks. And I'm going to look back and hate that. So that stopped. And then she married my best friend from high school. And I made a cartoon about their marriage, and their family got really upset. And it's a classic Pixar story. So,
My God, I did not know this, and I'm loving every second of it. Really?
It's if you just look up, yeah, they hated it. And then my friends who were still friends with them were getting down on me, being like, how could you? How could, dude, we're still friends with them. How could, and I was like, does anyone want to take my side in this? And also, I never said I wasn't like, first of all, my buddy had asked me if it was okay. I was like, I mean, it's weird, but I'm not going to, you're a grown man. Do what you're going to do. Like, it's been a year. It's still kind of fresh. Like, you know, but like, if this is, you know, and then he said, man, there's only one you. There's a million girls. There's only one Adam Ray. I go, well, that was really sweet. And I feel like if that's how you feel, then I guess I'll trust it, that it's not worth it, whatever. But again, don't do anything on my. And then I see him like with her, and then they get married, and I was like, all right, cool. Now, as a comedian, when I'm dealt a hand like that, it's very specific. You gotta make fun.
Yeah.
I hadn't really, and the quick way was to write a funny sketch, have my buddy animate it, and put it online. And I did that, and they hated it. So anyway, What's that?
How do I watch this?
I'll give you her dad's phone number, and he'll text you a link. No, it go to. That's the only communication I have with him. No, it's just type in, I think, my name, like cartoon wedding speech, I think.
Okay. Oh, easy. Cartoon wedding speech.
Yeah. It's probably.
And then once
but watch, there's like a whole, you hit me back up. You're like, dude, there's a lot of these, and there's a lot of them under your name. So which is weird. So the other one was then end of college, same kind of thing. She went to New York. We did that for a couple of years. And then she went to Reno to be a news reporter. And then that ended. And then LA to Seattle and for about 3 years. And I always was like, man, am I just not going to be able to do one in the same place? Because I was like, what does it say about me? But I enjoyed that I was – well, what I enjoyed was able to, you know, be focused on career and look – and. Distance makes the heart grow fonder, and it was, I think, love, what I learned, love gets you through about a year, year and a half, and then compromise does have to happen, because there's no way, the missing becomes too heavy, the fights start to, you know, develop out of nowhere from dumb things, the timing gets off, especially East Coast, West Coast. The girl in New York, before she went to Reno, was working as a page at NBC, and she was working SNL parties, and she... At one point, she's like, I got to go. John Stamos wants to talk to me. Click. And I was like, in my head, I was just like laying down like this, just playing out John Stamos penetrating my girlfriend at the party, like while she's still holding the phone. I'm like, I bet he just came up right behind her, put it right in. And she let him because he's Stamos. So it's, you know, you have to, I think, at some point get in the same place, which is what I'm doing now, which is way better. And
how often did you see those people?
When I was should I lay down? I feel like that was definitely the way you sipped after the question was very therapeutic. There's a therapy sip. Is that not true?
Anybody not watching the video of this podcast, I am sipping tea and wearing a shawl and taking notes. I For not so much for the Santa Barbara one, because that was probably like every weekend, but for the other two, how often were you seeing those people in a month?
Seattle one was also family, so I would try to double dip on that and go home once a month, once every 2 months sometimes. Okay. New York one, you know, I was working at Universal Studios at the time, so I would just basically take my Wolverine paychecks and cash them in for a JetBlue ticket. And because she was 9 to 6 or 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, and Wolverine was a little more was a little looser of a schedule. Sometimes number two and number one Wolverines could you know take my shifts. And yes, if you do deductive reasoning, I was number three Wolverine. So I would go over there, you know, at least once a month, which was a lot, and sometimes every 6 to 8 weeks. And that just is like, then I start getting like, am I the only one having to do this? New York's cool, but then you're just like, yeah, just the wear and tear. Have you ever done long distance?
Besides Sam? Yeah. No. I mean.
And what a unique situation that is, because that's like, you got, I mean, he kind of shared with me when he was on, which is just really great. And I don't know how much we have to rehash it, but from your perspective, like, you know, it's at a, how long were you dating before now, before you're living together?
About 6 months. It's like enough time that you could be solid, but not enough time that it's like, of course I'm going to stay with you. You know what I mean? It's like, right at that honeymoon period. But also being long distance, as I'm sure you know, you kind of like, you get closer and have serious conversations about your future so much faster than you would with a person who lives, you know, 30 minutes to an hour from you. I've never dated anybody who lived like 10 minutes from me. Everyone I've dated has been like 45 minutes to an hour and a half away from me.
Whoa, strategic.
So for me, I'm like 2 hours to Santa Barbara. That's nothing. Like that doesn't seem to be a big deal. But yeah, I mean, LA to New York, when we first started talking, I was like, this is a terrible idea. Like, when are we going to see each other? And once we decided to date, I mean, I started off thinking like, okay, if we can see each other once a month, that'll be good for, you know, a good chunk, like 3 to 5 days. And I think we went like 1, 2.5 week period where we didn't see each other. And we were like, this sucks. Like, we can't do this. And at first it was like, okay, we can't go 3 weeks. Like, that was too long. We can't do that again. And then it was like, okay, 2 weeks feels too long also. And it's like, all right, 10 days is really pushing it. And so January and February, except for maybe like 1 week, we had been either both of us coming back to LA or both of us coming back to New York from the road, like pretty much every week. So we were seeing each other a lot, but I mean, neither of us have ever seen anyone we've dated this much. I've never spent a month straight with anybody I've dated. You know, I mean, I'm sure you haven't either. As a road comedian, where you're traveling every weekend, like,
fuck no. That's new. No, that's new territory.
Brand new territory. When I lived with my ex, he would travel with me sometimes, but like, for the most part, I saw him, you know, Sunday or Monday through Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then wouldn't see him on the weekends unless he came with to Chicago or Denver or whatever. So yeah, and you know, a lot of us have never been literally trapped in an apartment with somebody we're dating or even married to. Like, I was talking to Dustin Nickerson, who's a comedian who we both are friends with. And I said, like, man, like, and this is like 2 weeks in, I'm like, marriage is really hard. And he goes, this is so much harder than marriage. He's like, there are no breaks. This is so much different than marriage. He's been married for like 15 years. So
does he have kids?
Yeah, he's got 3 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
he decided that's worse or better right now.
Yeah, I know. Weren't you saying that on Whitney's pod about wishing you had kids? Or she said she did?
No, Whitney was like, should I just get pregnant? And I was like, no, are you kidding me? Now I'm like, the world is terrifying. Why would I bring more people into this terrifying mess?
Oh, definitely not.
Now that we know pandemics are real.
I've definitely had thoughts like that, though. I definitely thought about shaving my head a couple days ago.
A lot of people. Sam said that.
Yeah.
I was like,
is that a Jewish guy
thing? What are we doing here?
It's like, we know what the shaved heads looked like. It was not a good look. That's not funny. But
why not Nikki Glaser tweet something like that too about wanting to shave her head? I think a lot of people.
I thought you were about to say she did do it. That's crazy.
No, I don't think she did it.
What is it? That's not a thought that crosses a girl's mind, does it? Like the G.I. Jane, like
I think
like,
it does.
Really? Out of boredom or out
at
of
least
like
a short haircut?
Yeah. Would you ever do that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Shave it?
Yeah.
I would never shave my head because I'd look like Charlie Brown, but. I would maybe cut it short. If I could go get it cut by a professional, I would never cut my own hair short. That's a terrible idea. But if I could go get it cut by someone who knows what they're doing right now and get it cut short just to see, I would probably do that right now since we got a few months to let it grow out.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's
why not?
A few months at least. We were texting about this a little bit ago too, when you were like, we're just sharing our own concerns for what's happening. And I didn't really think of it as a possibility until I think you said it. I'm going to paraphrase, but it was something like, I don't know if you said like, if stand-up comes back or what, like if we're even going to have careers when this is over. And I was just tipsy enough to go, could that happen? You know, like where I was like, I hadn't really put that down as an option, but which that's crazy. But I know you were joking, but also kind of being like, well, there's so much uncertainty that nobody knows. That's what's really crazy is that, you know, whether it's media or scientists or anyone in the, in our government that you look to for an answer, it's like, there's no, I think I heard Rogan even say this. He's like, you just don't, there's no timetable. I've talked to doctor friends that are like, or people, you know, in the NBA that are like, they're saying maybe this, but we don't, because we don't know X, Y, Z, we can't even start talking about A, B, and P, you know? That's not a saying, but you get what I'm trying to lay down. Something about like understanding, having a timetable to where you can predict any sort of, you know, idea when normalcy will resume. What do you miss most about stand-up?
Oh my God. I mean, all of it. I mean, we've been at home just going, do you miss airports? I miss airports.
Yeah.
Like shit you never miss. Like all the shitty parts about doing stand-up, like the travel and whatnot. I'm like, I would kill to eat at like an airport Chili's right now.
Oh God.
You know,
I would love to get a sandwich that's past its due date from a Wolfgang Puck dispensary shelf. And it's not even Wolfgang Puck. It's like a food to go mart, but it's a Wolfgang Puck sandwich that somebody put there because they decided they didn't want it. And you're like, I know this is 2 weeks old. I'm going to roll the dice because I'm going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And
I want a Boar's Head kiosk.
I even miss the cheesy flight attendants that'll take a stab at a real silly announcement.
Oh,
have you heard
gosh.
A good one ever?
No, I've never heard a good one. My favorite ones are when they get passive aggressive with passengers who are boarding too slowly.
Oh, yeah.
Where they just get on there like, we would love to leave right now, but you guys need to get on the plane and put your things up. Like, have you heard those when you're there, when like they're delayed and they're like kind of blaming you and they're going, if everyone could get on really quickly, we'd like to leave on time. And you're like
we've just been fucking standing here.
Right.
Yeah.
But have I think it's kind of fun. Or like when people get up to pee too soon, which is usually me, and they do like an announcement where they go, the seatbelt sign is still on. So
as you're walking down like the aisle, she's just kind of like, it's on right now. So when you go into that, you're going to close the door. And she's in. So while she's in there, let's let this be a lesson to everyone. You're like, you're narrating my pee. Have you ever been one-upped in a Southwest line? And I know you got a Netflix special now, so Southwest is probably a thing of the past. But you know, a quick AZ Vegas flight. Have you been a part of a Southwest? You know, where you're maybe Group B and you're number 44, and someone's kind of lurking behind you, and they're 40, and they're coming up behind you. And everyone's boarding, and it's as the line's moving, and they just come up, and they're like, what are you? Actually, let me even say 42, and you're 40. So two spots, and you're just like, we're all getting on. And they come up as you're going, and they're just like, oh, and they just slip in right in front of you. Have you had that happen?
It depends where you're at. If we're A1 through 30 and you want to get on before me, you're 15, I'm 20, whatever. Get in front of me. I don't care. honestly, if I'm in the first 30 on a Southwest flight, I just get in the back because it doesn't matter. We're all still getting to pick the seats we want. Even if I'm in the first like 50, A50, I feel safe. If you get into like B territory, every spot counts. I don't blame anybody. Just like, what number are you?
Yeah.
You're 41? I'm 40. Get out of my way. That once you're into the Bs, that could be the difference between a window seat and a middle.
Yeah. It's Hunger Games Southwest style when you are in group B or C. It's literally like, I mean, I saw somebody pull out a switchblade once to that is, yeah, I've been nudged by people before to go in line when I've been just kind of like dilly-dallying or spacing out on my phone. What did you fly to Aspen when we went there? Because I think we both flew the same.
Maybe Delta? I can't remember what I flew because it was probably Delta, but there were no good options to get to Aspen or get out of Aspen.
I know. And you and I both were kind of waiting until the last chance to get there and not get there super early. Becky Robb obviously has a history with Aspen and was doing, I think, a few more part of a few more festivities, but I didn't realize there was so much other shit to do other than what we were doing. And then I see you post a video of Snow Dog Racing with the cast of Snow Dogs starring Cuba Gooding Jr. And I was like, when did she find time for this? And then I realized, oh yeah, there's a whole day before the show. How'd that happen?
Yeah, a lot of time. My manager is from Colorado and had done it before. And she was like, it's the best thing I've done. My treat, we're going. So she took me and another client of hers, Dusty Slay, who was there as well. And we all went dog sledding. And it was great. It was really fun. Although I will say the videos you saw were the dogs taking us downhill.
Yeah.
And then the way back was all uphill. And those dogs had to stop every like 30 seconds to rest, which was very triggering for me.
Oh yeah.
As being an overweight child, I was like, this
I didn't even think of that.
Can we just get out and walk next to the dogs? Like, this feels like anytime a boyfriend has tried to pick me up, or I'm just like, please don't do it. Like, I'm sorry. Please, you're going to hurt yourself. Yeah. Like, I
didn't realize how many steps that were leading up to this Red Robin. This is on me. Yeah. It would have been a great video if you could have somehow finagled a switcheroo with you guys in the dog with the harnesses and everything, and the dogs just chilling in your seats.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know how you would have pulled that off, but I think you could have because you obviously have an eye for content as seen in your, you're now Variety approved quarantine web series. Just when you think Variety's got no time to do write-ups during a pandemic, they don't stop for nothing. That was so cool.
I think all anybody has to write about is the pandemic. And so writing about entertainers entertaining during the pandemic is like, I've seen so many articles about that. I think people are really like desperate to write articles like shining a light of laughter in the darkness. These are how these comedians are dealing with the pandemic. Like, you've seen so many of those. So, I mean, you know, and it is what we're all doing. I feel like we're all just trying to
get a write up
relevant.
Oh yeah. what do you love about doing? Sam was saying it happened pretty organically as far as like, you know, the amount of joking you guys are doing and trying to, you know, obviously be thinking of ways to be creative during this time. And then how can you, you know, not just waste your downtime and also take advantage of like your rapport and people digging seeing you guys. It's all mixed up into like a, you know, a good recipe for a good show. Is it something you guys think you'll do like as long as this goes, or do you think you're gonna hit a point and go, all right, let's find another cool thing? Oh, the movie podcast obviously coming out of that too, so those seem like two good things to keep you busy.
Yeah, I mean, the sketch series is like, who knows? I mean, at the end of the day, those are really just relationship jokes.
Yeah.
They're like little relationship vignettes.
Yeah.
As one interviewer described it back to me, and I was like, ooh, that makes them sound fancy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, those definitely won't survive past this quarantine for sure. The movie podcast could be something we continue to do. I mean, I feel like throughout every relationship you're in, you're always showing each other movies that the other person hasn't seen yet, that you're like, this was really important to me growing up, or like, this is really big for me, or like, I love this movie, and if you don't love it, it's fine, but it means a lot to me. And it's hard, it's been hard for me to find movies to show him because he's seen everything.
Right.
So like, my picks are gonna seem pretty basic and like, probably pretty lame in comparison to his, because he's like Goodfellas in Chinatown, and I'm like, we're watching Harry Potter.
Oh yeah, he
and
told 13
me 13 going on 30.
Oh boy.
You know, where you're like, what has he not seen? Because everything good I like, he's seen already.
Right. He said you showed him Singing in the Rain, which I really appreciate.
I did show him Singing in the Rain.
That's a great movie. It,
what a night that was when I realized he hadn't seen Singing in the Rain yet.
Yeah.
The classic.
The amount of choreography in one shot. I mean, it's like Gene Kelly. I mean, I know he gets his due credit, but like, I don't know. Does he? Like, why are we not talking about him every day? And every time somebody does a jump kick or a turn, aren't we? Why don't we call that the Kelly two? I don't know. You know, this is improv's tough, Taylor, but I think that there's something to be said about like those movies and how they paved the way for, they also don't do La La Land is, you know, got a lot of that fun stuff, but it's like, man, they didn't do that shit in one shot like that.
La La Land is trash compared to Singing in the Rain. And I like La La Land. I think it's sweet and fun and
is
like
it too
beautiful.
Rom-com-y? Is it too, like, I'm always curious because I enjoyed it, but I'm always curious from a girl's perspective. Are you like, you're tugging too hard? Like, just, you know, do one little loop and a light pull. Like, no, it's good.
I think it's great. I love that they don't end up together. And it's such a...
I dig that.
That's such an important relationship to have as an artist with another creative person who also has dreams, but it's doomed and it's not going to work out. And it's just like a moment in time of your life. And I think a lot of people, even not artistic people, have that. I mean, it's relatable to so many different people who had that person like in college or whatever, who... your lifestyles were just not going to sync up, but you learned a lot from each other, and I just love that they didn't end up together. I thought that was great.
Do you think that La La Land kept Gosling and Emma Stone apart in the movie just so the girls watching could go, Ryan Gosling's still single? And by girls, I mean,
no, I don't think so, because he's not. He's married to Eva Longoria, right?
I didn't see a ring. No, yeah, he was. Yeah, he was married.
No, they're married.
Yeah, yeah. In real life or the movie? Okay.
In real life, I think he's married.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about for sake of the movie. Like, you know, if you could kind of suspend.
Oh, for sake of the movie. Oh, yeah.
Like it doesn't end up. And so you could walk out of the theater being like, I don't know. I'm always curious what's going on in the head of a rom-com writer. Like how much, because, you know, look, we got Lifetime Cheese, Hallmark. I had an audition for leading a Hallmark movie, a Christmas movie, and my girlfriend was like, I've never been more excited for any of your opportunities. And I was like, yeah, I guess those do like play pretty well during, whether it's the holiday season or just, I don't know, divorce season. But
same thing.
You'd be great in a rom-com. And I'm sure people, I bet I'm not the first person to say that. How many people have told you that?
I would love to be in a rom-com. We've been talking about that since we've been quarantined. I mean, that's the thing, is two creative people trapped together. We're just like, what else can we do? We're like, maybe we should write a rom-com for ourselves. Like,
yes, dude, just throwing darts at the wall. I'm sure your reps too, right? Are like, this is the time. This is the time to get a cartoon going, or you know, come up with a new salsa, something that's...
Oh, yeah. Are your reps doing that? Are they like sending you,
yeah, I mean,
you know, suggestions?
A little bit. I, you know, my manager pushed me to get on TikTok once I got with them, and I was like, wow, this is your big this is your big move, huh? But it's like, get
mine did too, by the way, and they did it for me. So I was like, all right.
And I mean, you know, I think I do a good job of being like self-sufficient, and if anything, I think it's too, there's always my problem where it's too many things that I'm trying to be like, let's make all these, and they're like, pick one, psycho. And then I think I've gotten good at like narrowing down, that I'm not just sending 20 log lines. It's like, hey, here's a fully produced pilot and sizzle that I spent 6 months on and put all my money in. And then here's something that is just a, you know, something from every world of it. Here's just a trailer. Here's just a deck. Here's which one of these can, and then it's always, well, which one are you most passionate about? I do think that if you're not trying to create during this time or do anything, first of all, I don't know how you're surviving because, I mean, you know, and you, I would love for you to speak to this. You talked a little bit about it on Whitney's pod about just like, you know, anxiety and depression. And this, I feel like is, you know, probably hitting people harder in a way that you could never even try to anticipate for, because look, we all, you know, can get good, especially in the comedy world, at being by ourselves. People that don't do this can find ways. I have friends that, you know, work from home that have a routine and are pretty happy just doing their thing. They have a handful of friends in their network and they kind of see, but now is like very tough because it's just them and there's not that extra give and take with somebody live. But, you know, I have days where I am like, should I get on something? Because I get kind of weighted down from all this, but then I try to not have a pity party and find a way, go, well, what are you not doing to get out of it? But then sometimes even whatever I find creatively to fill that void isn't fulfilling it like I want it to, or, and then I just, and then I'll go, well, if I could get on a stage, or if I could if I could drive to an audition, you know what I'm saying? Like versus just doing it all in one spot. It's and then you try to meet that with, okay, I could also be, you know, wondering if my family member is going to get, you know, through the night because the ventilators are running low. So it's like,
yeah,
perspective, your problems matter, but you know, how do you, and I know you spoke too, because I'm always curious. Cause I, you know, shit, there's times where I'm like, maybe I should get on a fucking something to boost my mood. And you spoke about a few things that you got on that really helped. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you I'm on medication and I feel very depressed right now. Wow. I feel like this situation is not a good indicator of whether or not you need antidepressants or a mood stabilizer or something would be my guess. I mean, I am not a doctor, so I don't know.
Whoa. It says below your, I don't know if that's Zoom that put that up, but it says Dr. Tomlinson below.
That's what? Just for credibility. It's worth it.
Just get some free Ambien. Is there things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad. Yeah. I got on something.
Oh, you
that
are?
I'm on meds. Oh yeah, yeah. I take a mood stabilizer. I don't think it's technically an antidepressant. It might be. I think it's a mood stabilizer for people that had bad side effects to antidepressants, which is was my experience. That I take every night, and then I also have like as needed medication that I take.
Gotcha.
Like I have something for insomnia. I have Klonopin. Like I have something else for anxiety. Like it's helpful to have those things as like tools, but even those besides the, antidepressant or mood stabilizer that I take at night, everything else is on like an as needed basis. And I try to only take that stuff when it's like, there is no other option. You know what I mean? Like,
Right. Okay,
you went for a walk. You got some fresh air and sunlight on your face, you exercised, you've eaten really healthy, you've had enough water, you talked to someone who loves you, you did something productive. Like once I've gone through the checklist of all those things, that's when I go, okay, maybe time for a Klonopin or maybe time to take an edible or something, you know, like, yeah. I think it's important to kind of not, at least for me, I shouldn't speak for everybody, but for me during this time, I'm trying not to self-medicate too much.
Yeah.
To the point where I stop being productive because I don't want to lean on anything, to keep myself okay.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm very grateful and lucky that I have those resources, when things do get bad. Cause you know, I mean, this is insane. Like we're all like depressed and anxious and mourning the loss of our entire lives. I mean, you know, as a stand-up, even when you're not making money as a stand-up comedian, when you're just starting out, you're able to perform every night, you know, you're able to feel like you're getting closer to that. And so this, where we're all just grounded, it's like, this is the first time in my life I've been like, oh, I'm unemployed and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
And everybody's unemployed and we're afraid of catching this disease and or other people getting it and dying. And it's, there's no, I don't think there's any, like you said, there's no knowing what's going to happen. There's no rule book. So whatever you need to do to be okay during this time, I support you. I think it's different for everybody. For me personally, I have just been trying to try every possible thing before maybe I dip into anxiety medication, or weed or whatever.
I like that you said edibles. I don't know you were fucking with that. That's good.
Yeah. I have really bad nightmares when I don't take an edible. So I've been taking an edible for like the last few years at night to go to sleep, because THC inhibits dreaming.
Career related nightmares, cartoon related nightmares.
Everything. I mean, the career related nightmares are fine. I can deal with those.
On stage and forgetting your act, or like somebody trying to stab
you. I usually have a dream that I'm in like a play and I
Me
don't
too.
Know. Do you?
Oh yeah. And I have a friend who's very into like analyzing that stuff. So she usually give me a pretty straight answer, but then sometimes it's not the answer I want to hear. And she'll try to, you know, tell me what I should do. And I'm like, maybe you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Where I'm like, I forgot all the lines to the play. And then I went outside and my car wasn't there. She's like, you're not prepared for what's coming. I'm like, all right, you know what? I don't think calling you is a good idea. You just seem to be taking me down a dark path. But yeah, that play one is very real. Or I had one probably a month ago where it was doing a play that I did in high school. And I went in and it was, everyone acts like, you know, time had passed. So it was almost like I was going back to do it like now, but I couldn't find like my wardrobe. So I went out in street clothes. And then I was like, fuck, I need to like quickly go through the whole script, because my scene's next and I don't know the dialogue. Am I going to improvise? Everyone's going to look at me like, you know, and then that happened. And then I woke up and it was crazy. Like the amount of anxiety from not knowing what the Tin Man is going to say next to the Cowardly Lion and the Wiz. That was the fact that I was just going to have to improvise and be like, hey, my heart's actually fine. Let's fucking, we don't got to go to Oz. I'm feeling pretty good.
I have ones where nobody even gave me a script and I'm about to go on.
Whoa.
And I'm like, where's
that's way worse.
I just need to look at a script. Yeah. And nobody will get me one. And I have to go. It's like, it's so weird. But yeah, no, the nightmares that are like too bad are like, I had a lot of dreams about, you know, people. You know, I was dating, like, just becoming totally different people, or lying to me, or fucking with me, and dreams where people in my family died or disappeared, or dreams where I was being attacked in, like, the hotel room I fell asleep in on the road, so then I'd wake up in that hotel, not be able to tell if I was dreaming or not. I lucid dreamed a few times and couldn't wake myself up. So I was just trapped in the dream, going, knowing I'm dreaming, trying to prove to people in my dream that I was dreaming, and nobody would believe me.
We've got the opening scene to our rom-com. wait a sec. That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's really scary.
So if you have a dream about a guy in a hotel, like at the front desk attacking you, how weird is that when you walk down and you're like, can I get some toothpaste? And he's like, are you now analyzing everything he says and does?
Super weird. Yeah, it's really creepy. And you when you wake up in the middle of the night and you're sleep deprived because you've been traveling and you had this like horrifying, very vivid nightmare, there's part of your brain that goes, is it still happening? Like, am I still dreaming? Is this just another part of it? Because I'd also have dreams where those terrible dreams where you keep waking up within the dream and going, oh, I was dreaming. Like literally an Inception. Nightmare.
Without the Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Does the weed give you any fun dreams? Does it kind of take away and provide some extra adventures? No?
No. If I take enough, I've had to, like, up the dose as I've, you know, obviously gotten used to it. But if I take enough, I won't dream at all, which is perfect. I
love that. No dreams.
Yeah. Because if I, even if I don't have
keep
nightmares,
the dreams
I have
here.
A weird dream. Keep them in your heart.
And that's how the rom-com ends. Someone's like, well, so am I not supposed to have any dreams? And you go, have all the dreams you want, Gabe. I don't fucking know. My name's Ethan. Whatever. Keep them here. Cut. What's up? Well, you're just such a breath of fresh air, and you're always smiling, I feel like, even as you know, awful as these times can be. And I appreciate that because and a lot of people do. You know, I see it in the stuff that you post. People are just like so grateful that you're, you know, I don't know how much it's actually keeping some people going and alive the way that some people will comment on, but like, man, it is, you know, comedy is always a great distraction for the real troubles that life can provide. And you seem to be like super active in doing that and making sure that people have stuff. And the amount of people that are going back to watch your special, I think I saw one thing you reposted about somebody watching it like for the third time, and then they got on a podcast of yours and then they watched something else. They were kind of doing like a TT deep dive, which if you were a wrestler would be your, I think, your move for sure, the TT deep dive. And but I was really, that was really cool that they were just like, now I'm just consuming everything Taylor, because you know, that's also what's cool about being in your spot, where it's like being on this upswing with all these cool things that people love to discover new comics too, like, and getting on board before things really explode. And you're doing that, and you're so like interactive with people and sweet and not jaded. So keep doing
Thank
it.
Thank you. I mean, I'm trying. At least I got plenty of time to interact right now.
Yeah.
Virtually.
Yeah. You said you did a pod before this. Are you just like, I almost feel like you could truly just do, I mean, the amount of people that are hitting me up sometimes for like, just come do 7 minutes on a Zoom show. I'm like, if I do all the Zoom stand-up shows, it's going to make me a bad comic.
Have you done Zoom stand-up shows?
I've done a few. And
what do you think?
Man, I'm probably going to do a few more, but I don't know how many more after that. I know some people are truly trying to find a way to monetize it and are doing it, but I don't, I mean, and look, that part I get, and I don't want to turn myself off from that, but it wasn't great. And there were some notes from the person who was running it, because you know, some of the best parts were the crowd work I was doing on the people that ran the business in this 40 square thing. And I was really laying it to this guy who had like a weird statue of like, I kept saying it looked like a hamster with wings. And he was like, it's a dead pheasant I killed when I was 12. I was like, things not to say on Zoom in front of strangers. And he was like, I run the company. I was like, I don't give a shit, dude. Your screen's coming in. Like, and everybody was loving it. And it was like fun. But then I got some notes after about certain bits. And I was like, you know, like people love to, especially, and not in all corporate things. Some of them have been very pleasant, but more often than not.
You did a corporate Zoom show?
Yeah, yeah. Where people are like, they enjoy to be like, you know, I know we hired you, but I think I know what's going to work. And you're like, no, you don't. But I will listen.
Corporate shows in person are bad.
I know. But I don't know. It's the timing of it, the audio. It was all whack. So, and I don't use that word a lot. So if I'm using that to describe it, if I'm not
no, it is in fact whack.
If I'm not in a skateboard gang fight in a parking lot of a gymnasium in 1996, then you know that this Zoom show is not what you want your career to end up like. But I don't know. It was again. I'm always down to like. I think you're probably the same way, right? Like you want, if something scares you a little bit, you're like, well, let me jump in. I don't want to not ever feel like I'm above or you know, scared to, unless it was one of your you know, your nightmares, then which this could have been, you know, but I don't know. You gonna do any?
I don't know. I don't think so. They don't appeal to me at all.
Yeah, you're fine.
But after another month, who knows? I would really rather not, if I can help it.
Yeah. Well, I will. By the way, cut to another Variety write-up. Zoom comic Taylor Tomlinson says, I never thought I'd stoop to this, but we're still working on the article, but it's, boy, she's doing Zoom shows now.
Zoom comedian says she's never going back.
There it is. Whoa.
There it
She's never going back to real life. Damn. Well, no. Hopefully we get back to it soon. Hopefully I get to see you guys live in the flesh. Thanks for doing this. And Quarter Life Crisis is the amazing Netflix special that people are rewatching because it's that good. And Self-Helpless, the podcast, which I know the gals are pumped that you're able to be a part of that more so, which is very cool. And Instagram, Taylor Tomlinson Comedy?
Taylor Tomlinson.
Taylor Tomlinson. And that's where you can get...
And this is important to me. There's the podcast.
Oh, yes, the movie podcast. I'm going to jump into that because I as of last year, jumped into like movie pods. And there's one on the Ringer Network called The Rewatchables where they, you know, rewatch things and discuss. But they're all not comics. So when you guys posted that, I was like, yeah, that's the one. Like, that's what you do. With actual, like, you posted a little clip from one with a perspective about, what was it? You can remind me.
We did Austin Powers, but we took it down because the audio was so bad.
Oh.
So that was like a little teaser, I guess, that we ended up taking down because we just couldn't, we botched the audio and it just didn't sound very good. And we're like, we don't want this to be our first episode that people find. So yeah, we've got Goodfellas, Singing in the Rain, and Back to School Up right now.
Fuck yeah. If I can make some suggestions, Patch Adams, The Muppet movie. haven't seen it?
No, I've seen a bunch of Muppet movies, and I maybe need to make him watch a Muppet movie.
Fuck yeah, Muppet movie. He'll probably make you watch Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg, where she wins a contest and coaches the Knicks. Ask him about that. He'll smile.
He has talked about that.
Of course he has.
Sounds so bad.
It
Whatever.
Is,
I made him watch Harry Potter.
Yeah, you're even now. Yeah. All right. Well, you're the best. Thanks for doing this. And enjoy the rest of your day. What are you going to do?
You're the best. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day. Hope it goes by fast.
I mean,
don't mind us.
you're the best. Bye, Taylor. Thank you.
Bye.
See you soon.